A wave from the right is washing over the EU. But this isn't the first time in recent years, and how will this affect the rest of the globe? I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we're going to try and understand why Europe is once again shifting to the right, and if this is a result of the EU's lack of leadership in the eyes of the people. Thank you for joining us. You know, at the end of September 2022, we saw Giorgia Meloni elected as Italy's new leader, arriving at a critical time for not only the country, but the European Union. Sweden, in their most recent election, saw the majority swing to the right, with young voters actually doubling their support since the last election. Finland and Spain will be going to the polls in 2023, with early predictions looking like a right-wing coalition taking the majority. Belgium and Poland following the same pattern. And one of the most recent right-wing elected leaders, Hungarian President Viktor Orban, followed up his 2018 victory with even larger re-election numbers, defeating a candidate backed by Brussels. An obvious rejection of the current policies and agenda of those in power by the engaged electorate of the EU. You know, but this isn't the first time, as this wave came through in 2015 to 2020, but was stopped by those elections held during the pandemic era. Now, however, the wave is back and possibly more fortified than the previous. Crisis in the energy, food, labor, and immigration sectors are having a major effect on everyday life and cannot be ignored or spun by the mainstream media. People are engaged and angry at what those in power are doing, which only seem to be making the problems escalate. Could a persistent unwillingness by EU leaders to recognize the problems of the people ultimately lead to the elimination of most political parties in the EU? And could this spread to other continents? Joining us now for more is Anthony Constantini, a PhD student at the University of Vienna and author of this recent Politico article entitled "Understanding Europe's Shift to the Right." Thanks for joining us. Anthony, what effect, if any effects, will these new conservative leaders have governing their respective countries?
So I think the biggest effect that it's going to have is that the EU is potentially finally going to have to start drawing a line as to what it can actually do. For the longest time, the integrationists have had this ability to kind of slowly move things along with a court decision here or commission action there. And there's never really been pushback. The right in Europe has always been this kind of center-right, not really nationalist-y, not really caring about the EU. But now you're going to have an actual growing and large block of countries that want to say, hey, what exactly can you do? So that's going to be, I think, be the biggest effect, especially now Italy being one of the largest economies in the EU. It's now no longer, they can't write it off as, oh, it's a small country somewhere in the East. Now it's something that they have to take seriously.
In your opinion, what countries will go more right-wing moving into the future in Europe?
So I actually think Spain is one of the ones that by the end of next year is going to have a right-wing government. They have scheduled elections for, I believe it's the second half of 2023. And right now, the polls basically are pointing to a center-right, far-right coalition, which would be the PP and then Vox. I think obviously the prize is France. I think that's going to have to wait for the next presidential election, which is a way down the road. But I think the important thing is less of not that an expansion isn't important, because you could also see it in places like Finland, which it's a nice edge, but they could also result in a center-right, far-right coalition in their elections next year. But the actual chance for the right wing to hold these gains, because what happens is they always have these expansions. It always happens occasionally, but then they kind of fumble the ball immediately. And the kind of exciting thing is over these last 7-8 years of concurrent populist waves is that they're actually kind of holding. You know, the brothers in Italy of Italy have continually expanded their vote. The Five Stars, which are no longer, you know, they used to kind of have some aspects of right-wing populism, but they're still a relatively populist party, has stayed relatively strong. The Freedom Party in Austria has stayed relatively strong. In fact, right now it's above the mainstream People's Party. So I think the real focus for the right should be hardening their gains and not necessarily expanding to places where it might be harder and where they might have losses, which will dent their momentum.
How specifically will these leaders resist the technocrats who run Europe?
So right now, the only people who have really been doing that are Poland and Hungary. And since the war in Ukraine, that bloc has kind of split. And so the exciting thing is now you have not just those two who are still aligned on anti-EU issues, but now you have Meloni, you have a French parliament, which is now not controlled by populists by any means, but the populist left and the populist right have not only denied Macron a majority, but they have a pretty large part of the parliament on their own. I think the main thing you're going to see is, again, them pushing to say, you know, okay, why are you saying that you can just hold money back because of, say, corruption? That's the main thing they always do against Hungary, right? They say corruption. But no one ever goes after Bulgaria or Slovakia and Malta, both of which were countries that had journalists killed, and those killings were vaguely kind of connected to governments. So you're going to have a lot of, okay, what exactly, what do you do here? You know, like right now there's a court case going from the commission to the European, you know, the equivalent of a Supreme Court, about whether or not Hungary can ban LGBT teachings in schools. Now, there's nothing in the Treaty of Maastricht, there's nothing in the Treaty of Lisbon, which says that LGBT values are European Union values. But yet you had a French minister recently saying that access to abortion and LGBT rights are European Union values, which is not in any law or any treaty. And so what you're going to finally have is countries asking in force, like, look, what is this exactly? Secondly, you're finally going to have an answer to the migrant question, which has been going for years, which in every single right-wing victory, you see migrants being, if not the number one clear and above issue, one of the main issues. And you're finally, I think, going to have to see the commission act on this, because they have not. And they kicked the can down the road and kicked the can down the road. And now they've kind of run into this rock wall of right-wing victories.
Now, you mentioned migrants. How will leaders like Meloni deal with what they perceive as a migrant crisis?
Sure. So Meloni's biggest push, one of the biggest pushes in the campaign, was offshoring migrants as they want to come in. And for a long time, the European Union Commission has resisted this, not only because it looks bad, but because it's probably going to work. I mean, it's what Australia did, in their Stop the Boats campaign, and it worked. So you're definitely going to see that. And until she gets that done, which will probably take a while because working out the logistics is genuinely difficult, you're probably going to see some sort of deal with Libya in terms of, like, look, how much do we need to pay you to beef up your patrolling your coastline? So you're definitely going to start to see creative ways of trying to keep migrants just out of the EU wholesale. The issue with Greece and Turkey right now is problematic because Turkey is holding back so many migrants. Which is why you're probably going to see, Italy, Hungary, and countries like that push to somehow resolve this, because they don't want all of those migrants that Turkey is kind of corking in a bottle to be able to come out. So you're definitely going to see. I would be surprised if you didn't see legal offshoring. You'll probably see the Commission try to challenge that somehow, which I think would be damaging to themselves. But most likely the answer is going to be something like the UK is doing now, keeping them somewhere offshore, maybe Rwanda, maybe just, on the African coastline, maybe in Turkey, but somewhere outside of the EU, so they don't get those rights that they would gain if they step foot into it.
Now, how do countries actually deal with the sociological tensions of migrants who have already settled in these countries?
So that's the biggest difference, I think, between this second populist wave and the first populist wave, which really went from like 2015 to 2019. This new one is more of a reaction to, okay, now these migrants are here, what do we do? Before it was trying to stop them, and now it's, okay, they're here. And that was really the main thrust of the Sweden Democrats, who just had a really great election result about a month ago, was that, they're already here, there's not huge waves still coming in, but now you have, the media calls it gang violence, skyrocketing in Sweden. And the question is, what do we do about that? And I think a lot of them, Meloni included, are going to look to Denmark, which was mostly achieved by a center-left government, and it's the only center-left government that survived unscathed. What they're probably going to do is what they did, which was, first off, you ban migrant neighborhoods you can't have any neighborhood be more than 30% migrant. So you can't have these segregated areas that are literally just Arab, or literally just whatever, migrant group that would be. Secondly, you have it so some somewhat harsh punitive laws, which is you can basically take valuables away from migrants, which is what Denmark did. And they didn't do it so they could you know, take someone's wedding ring away. They did it so if you're clearly smuggling in a ton of stuff that's not necessarily yours or not something you need to have, that they can take that away. And the third, in terms of people who are already here, who people have been here for a while, is they mandate that their children take, you know, and obviously in Denmark, it's their own language and things like that. But in Italy, mandate that you take Italian language classes, mandate that you take Italian culture classes. And you'll probably see the same in Sweden, which usually gets a somewhat of a pushback, but it's kind of hard to push back against it and you know, do well, because why wouldn't you want to integrate them? So that's probably going to be the biggest push. Because that's what kept a lot of governments, again, the governments that did that, it kept them alive and it kept people happy.
Thank you, Anthony Constantini. Now we're going to take a short break and then be right back with our guest on the 360 View.
Children at St. Anne's Residential School suffered nightmarish levels of abuse, torture, and child rape, and yet the Office of the Attorney General suppressed thousands of pages of police evidence that identified those perpetrators.
In the school, I was electrocuted twice. I was only 7 years old. It was too high for me, so somebody put me in the chair. Father Lavoie used to run over here after he abused somebody and run here and seek absolution and whip himself.
Some of them are my relatives that didn't make it, drinking themselves to death, overdoses.
But you know what it made me? It made me the person I am today, because I'm a fighter. I don't give up with anything.
Investigations were too often handled differently because the deceased was indigenous.
So many of the worst criminals got away. The bishops got away. The ones who'd done most of the damage never got charged.
Glaciers, which have formed over tens of thousands of years, can give us important information into our climate and how it has changed over time. And what is scary is our glaciers are melting at an alarming rate. To learn more, we came here to Mount Elbrus to speak to Viktor Popovnik. He is a glaciologist who has devoted his entire life to the topic. It is a fascinating, at times dangerous, and very important job.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, and a new world that is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Anthony Constantini, a PhD student at the University of Vienna and author of this recent political article entitled Understanding Europe's Shift to the Right. Thanks for joining us. A big dividing issue is this war in Ukraine. Will this issue actually push more leaders and parliaments to resist rule from Brussels, especially as populations are taking to the streets to protest energy prices?
So one of the things that Brussels and has kind of been, you can tell they've been surprised by, is the fact that people haven't gotten angrier. Now, I think they're kind of counting their chickens before they hatch because it's only the middle of October. But I don't believe that they're going to push back too strongly against these sanctions, just because I think that a lot of, I mean, including Meloni, who's been pretty supportive of the sanctions, I think that they view the benefits for their countries outweighing the negatives. I do think, though, that you're going to see a rethink of European Union energy plans because this obviously can't continue. I think you might maybe see the Greens crack a bit throughout these countries in terms of their opposition to nuclear power. But beyond that, I don't think that there's going to be too much of a pushback. You see now Hungary saying, look, I think we need to slow down. We've had 6-7 sanction packages. Maybe we need to slow down now. But I don't think you're going to see an active, we need to completely overhaul these sanctions. I think you would feasibly if Ukraine started to really lose and any of the gains that they had got really pushed back by this mobilization. But if you don't, if that doesn't really happen, I don't think that Europe is going to buckle too much on that.
Do you think inflation will push governments more to the right? And how will that affect politics in Europe moving forward?
I think it may. Yeah, I think that you have some governments. I mean, for example, you have the government of Germany right now, which is just doing appallingly in the polls. I think that the ruling Social Democrats are in third place behind the CDU and behind the Greens. And I think that those two smaller coalition partners, the Free Democrats and the Greens, are kind of watching that. And they're seeing, you know, do we want to be associated long term with a government that's failing to address inflation, failing to address energy issues? But I think that Meloni and the Sweden Democrats and maybe Spain coming up soon, they're lucky in that they came in the middle of the crisis. And usually when you get elected in the middle of a crisis, as long as you look like you're trying to do something, you usually don't get punished for that crisis. We had this, for example, in the United States. Barack Obama was elected in the middle of an economic crisis. And even though he didn't do a fantastic job, he really looked like he was trying to do something. And so he got reelected. We saw when Jimmy Carter got elected in the middle of a crisis, he didn't really look like he was doing something. And so he lost in 1980. And so I think as long as Meloni really seems like she's trying to do things and doesn't seem like she's just kind of kicking back and we're only focusing on cultural issues, I think she'll probably be just fine. So I don't really see this hurting the far right. I do see it hurting the center parties. I think that the center left and the center right parties are both in serious trouble. By the end of next year, especially Denmark now just recently announced an election, you could feasibly have only two center left governments in the EU, which is incredible when you look at, say, 10 years ago. I mean, the idea that the Social Democrats would only control two countries is insane. And it's because there's kind of like a hollowing out of the center right and the center left, who because a lot of people just view their ideas as stale, as not applying to what we need today. So I do think that inflation could kind of further that hollowing out of the center of in Europe.
So I have to ask, what is the long-term answer, do you believe, to Europe's energy crisis?
So I think Europe has somewhat quietly, but more or less kind of acceded to the fact that when Donald Trump in 2018 was critiquing Germany for over-reliance on Russia, and they laughed at him at the UN, that he was more or less right. And this was, it was probably one of the biggest geopolitical errors in modern history. But at the same time, it would also be an error for the EU to then just flip and to completely rely on the United States. Right now, they can't, they don't have enough gas terminals. And also, then they just get owned by the United States like they were owned by Russia. So I think the future is probably diversification. They're going to buy, obviously, they're still going to buy oil from Russia. It's right there and it's cheap. They're going to buy some more gas from the United States. I think you're definitely going to see more stuff from the UAE, more stuff from the Middle East than they had previously. But then you're also going to have diversification in terms of wind, green. But more importantly, I think probably as this accentuates and gets worse, you're going to see a return to nuclear power. I think that this kind of very odd move away from it in the wake of Fukushima in Japan is going to be reversed, because it's just, you know, I think they're going to look at France, which gets 75% of its power from nuclear energy. And I think they're going to say, you know, I kind of want that for me. So you're going to have diversification. You're going to have more gas being bought from the US, more from the Middle East. But then also, I think you're finally going to see that nuclear taboo kind of broken.
Now, we are seeing large protests in places like Amsterdam, the Czech Republic, Germany, Austria. Do you think that at some level this reflects the EU and nation states governments ignoring the will of the people? And could we even see violence? Could there be violence even against migrants?
So I think that when looking at protests and you know, whether or not they're being ignored, I think you have to kind of have a two-part equation. You have to have the protests and then election results. You know, Richard Nixon talked about his great silent majority, and he tried to argue, look, all of these Vietnam War protesters, they don't represent the majority. And he was proven right when a year later he won 49 out of 50 states. So I think sometimes, for example, in Italy, you really didn't have large scale protests. I mean, there was some there here and there, but there wasn't a, whoa, you know, there's a part two of March on Rome, that kind of thing. But yet they elected a far right government. Whereas, you know, where I am currently in Vienna, there were a lot of anti-vaccine protests here, and especially anti-lockdown protests. And, you know, I hated the lockdowns. I was happy to see them, but it did not represent the Viennese population at all, because they were overwhelmingly supportive of these lockdowns. And when there was a chance to vote for an anti-vaccine party recently in the presidential election, it got like 1% of the vote. And right now in the parliamentary polls, it's at 4%. So I think that you can't look too just at protests, but you also have to look at election results. Now, in some of these places, like in the Netherlands, the big farm protests and stuff, you have had a spike in right-wing support. Belgium, which is tangentially related in that same farm issue, the top two parties in the polls right now are two right-wing parties. But the problem with protests and the problem with gaining support is, but can you get to a majority? And like right now, for example, the top two Belgian parties are indeed right-wing, and they're both doing well, but they're not going to form a majority. And so the question is, you know, do a majority of people, or at least a larger enough plurality, are they angry? And right now, I'd say they're not. You know, most people in Austria, they either didn't care about the vaccine or they weren't angry enough to protest against it. Now, with energy, that's always kind of different, right? You know, because like you can kind of ignore vaccine stuff, whatever. If you're not going to get it, you just won't get it. But everybody needs to heat their home. You know, everybody needs, well, not everybody, but, you know, people need to drive in their cars, things like that. So I do think that we are probably going to see, in the countries that are less automatically inclined, less kind of Wilsonian, less automatically inclined to support Ukraine, you're definitely going to have people getting like, okay, like, when is this going to end? Again, especially if Russia starts to do better. So I think it's too early to tell. I don't necessarily think we'll have like massively violent protests about energy. But I do think that it's going to grow. You'll probably see some, if there's a government currently teetering, like the Czech government is kind of wobbly, you could see elections there or something like that. As for migrants, I'm not quite, the problem is, again, there's no, if there were waves coming in with migrants, if there were waves coming in still, you would probably see protests. I think you'll get protests if violence continues. If the violence, I think Sweden had something like 54 mass shootings or something, which is unheard of for a country like Sweden. If that violence expands to the rest of Europe, you could have that. Like, for example, there was a murder in Austria a couple months ago, and the person who committed it was found to be a migrant who was hiding in a migrant community in France. That kind of stuff gets people's blood boiling. If that happens more and more, I think you will definitely see more anger and potentially more larger and rowdy protests. Yeah.
Could a consistent move, do you feel like, to the right by more and more governments eventually lead to the end of the EU?
So I think that this was a fair question in 2015, and a lot of people were generally wondering, especially when Brexit kind of came as a real shock. But I think the problems that the UK had with that, coupled with the fact that even Maloney, even Orban, you know, they haven't really been, we need to leave the EU right now. You know, you had Le Pen kind of back away. And the reason they all backed away, it wasn't really because they were cowed by Brussels threats, it's because they realized it's just not a popular position. A lot of people, you know, for better or for worse, really like the EU. You know, you had a majority of Europeans, you had a plurality vote for the far right, and they very solidly supported them. But you also had a majority approve of Mario Draghi's government, who was a European central banker before he was picked to be a technocratic prime minister. So I don't think you're going to have a collapse. I think what could happen is if this, we're going to have elections in the European Parliament in 2024. The question is going to be, how does the right-wing bloc do? If they do very well, which right now they're on a path to that, then they can finally force a showdown on, you know, what I was talking about earlier in terms of, look, what exactly can you do? And the integrationists are going to have to decide, do we push back or do we kind of give in and make this clear? If they try to push back, you probably could see not a wholesale collapse, but the beginning of a fracturing, because until now, the integrationists, again, they've just been kind of able to slowly expand. And if that suddenly gets stopped, you know, you're going to have a immovable object, the right meeting unstoppable force, which is integrationism. then you could probably see some sort of crack. But I don't think the crack is going to come from right-wingers wanting to leave. I think it's going to be integrationists pushing too hard and kind of ignoring the reality of people not liking these unelected bureaucrats in Brussels having a say over the minutia of their lives.
Oh, thank you. And that was PhD candidate at the University of Vienna, Anthony Constantini. Politics in the United States is divided into two major parties. However, this is not consistent with the rest of the world. What does seem to follow the same pattern in elections is a turning away from those currently in power when the people have a choice. Now, globally, there is a major divide between those in power and those affected by their power. The action by those in power results in the reaction, either positive or negative, by the people. This isn't about political parties or left versus right, in my view. This is about those in the ruling class working for their own benefit rather than for the benefit of the people who put them there. You know, so often we wonder why areas who have been neglected for decades continue to put in power those from the same ideology. It's absolute stupidity to keep repeating the same action, which only results in continued degeneration and pain. Accountability to the people is the key. And will the new right-wing governments being installed in the EU actually make their campaign promises come true? Now, if they do, will this be the new wave of populist governments which will sweep the globe? I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.